103.9 FM, WOZO Radio, Knoxville.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please?
Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
Girl, loved the mess. I watched the swirl of smoke from candles burning while Mary looked up yearning. I got confirmed and I confessed. I really felt that I was blessed. Plus, I love my uniform. So did the boy who lived next door. But something changed when I became of age. Things I thought were true. Someday I'd break the big taboo of letting go of God.
Hello and welcome to Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on WOZO Radio 103.9 LP FM. Live right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Today is Sunday, June 16th, and if it's not where you're listening, then you're listening to a rebroadcast of the show or a podcast. I'm Dotter Five, and as usual, we have Wombat on the phone with us. Hello, Wombat.
Hello, it's the Wombat. I'm ready to go today. It's Father's Day. Happy Father's Day, everybody, including you, Wombat.
Happy Father's Day to you. You're the father of a very frisky little cat,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah. Digital Free Thought Radio Hour is a call-in talk radio show about atheism, free thought, rational thought, humanism, and the sciences. And conversely, we also talk about religion, religious faiths, gods, holy books, and superstition. And if you get the feeling that you're the only non-believer in Knoxville, well, you're just not. There are several atheist, free-thinking, and rationalist groups that exist right here in Knoxville, and I'll be telling you how you can connect with them right after the mid-show break. Also, did you know that there's an atheist call-in television show broadcasting here in Knoxville? And it has been for over 9 years. Did you know that, Wombat?
I love it. I think it would probably be my favorite one of them. My favorite part is when he screams
really?
Out Shazam and he turns into a more powerful version of himself. I thought I'd get bored of that, but he did it so many times. I'm like, okay, I'm back in again.
Well,
really, really
you're
good.
On the wrong channel. You never found the right channel. It's channel 190. Actually, it's channel 12 on Comcast. 192 on what's that other one? Charter, channel 192. Anywho, one day you'll find it and you'll see it, and that'll be cool. But we'll talk about that a little more after the mid-show break as well. And in spite of what Steve Martin would have you think, there are an awful lot of atheist songs out there, and you'll be hearing some of them right here on this program.
Sure will.
And generally on this station as they are in rotation. So we're going to be talking about Father's Day today, is that correct?
Yeah, I'm really happy to always celebrate a day that I feel like is one of those low-key celebrate everyday sort of days, but it's nice to have that recognition for one day of like, hey, if you got a dad, know that they put in a lot of work, know that they need some recognition. Here's why I like Father's Day. Go to any American award ceremony, Emmys, whatever. Trophy, Super Bowl, whatever. The guy, athlete, or actor, they win the award, they get up on stage, they got every microphone up in front of their face, and what's the first thing they do? They thank God and they thank their mom.
Right.
Dad is just there like, who drove you to this? Yeah, who did that? What's going on here?
That's right.
Do all these things, and get mom and God always credit every single time. So
yeah, and it's particularly poignant if you don't have a father right now, or if he's gone on to his reward, as they say, or not with you anymore.
Sure, yeah.
It's, you know, my father passed when I was 28, and that was over 40 years ago. So if you have a father, make sure that you show him how appreciative you are and how loving you are toward him.
Pat on the back, because being a father is hard.
Big old pat on the back.
Yeah,
that's right. That's for good fathers.
I seen
bad fathers.
So we are going to be talking about good fathers, bad fathers today. So what I thought was, it's always important to have a standard, like a standard of what you mean by when you say good father or bad father, or what you use to judge between the two. And I found personally that I have like a pretty specific list of character traits that I consider traits that belong to a good father, and some that belong to a bad father. And when I compare those against religious deities that have like father-like associations with them, like the Holy Father or the Great Father, or you pick a religion, there's probably a male dominating force behind it. And some are really, really bad dads. And I thought it would be probably kind of cool to compare fathers in religious history against what atheist fathers would do. And not saying that all atheist fathers are the same, but hey, we got an atheist dad on the show right now with us.
Yeah, that's true.
Maybe you can chime in and say, hey, what would you do differently in these kinds of situations? I think probably a good place to start is, what do you mean by good father? What do you mean by bad father?
Well, I think that, you know, you just have to get into morality as well. One, you would want to prioritize your offspring's happiness, well-being, and flourishing.
Oh, that's perfect. Well said.
We could extend to society as a whole. And if you're treating someone, offspring or not, and means on contrary to those, then you're not being a very good one father or two citizen of your society.
Wow, that's a double impact. So you're saying if you're a bad father, you're not only you're a bad dad to your kid, but you're also a bad person to society? Is that what you're saying?
If you do that to everybody as well as your kid, yeah, I'd say.
I'd almost say like if you're a bad dad, even if it's just to your kid, that has a bad impact on society because your kid's going to go into society.
Sure.
You know, like if other people follow your examples of how to raise a kid, it's just a bunch of bad kids being raised.
Right.
I mean,
there have been a lot of studies that say that if you were abused as a kid, you're more likely to be an abusive parent when you grow up.
No doubt.
So you're just propagating that on down through society, down through the generations.
Let me tell you, but this is back when I was in undergrad or graduate school at Georgia Tech. I was at this summer school event with my godkids. Like these kids we were helping, I've been not raising, but like been like a mentor since like we were really young. And they came over to the school because they had like a summer school program. And I was like, great, I get to see my godkids. That's great. And we bring them into this big classroom where they're going to do like this obstacle race where they build a robot, build an actual robot, and then have the robot do some obstacles. And so the school is teaching them the rules. And there's like this open seminar where they can all ask questions and stuff. And I'm sitting with my godkids. And I remember I'm talking to them. I'm having just a fun conversation with them. We're talking back and forth. And I use the word irregardless. Right? Which is a word.
Mistake.
It's a word now in the dictionary. It's been a word since like 2012. Like, so
really?
Because people just say it so many times that it means now regardless. So like they just said, just throw it in the dictionary. That's how usages work. Like the dictionary is just like, hey, this is what English sounds like as far as 2018.
Yeah, it's like literally doesn't actually mean literally anymore.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So you would be surprised. When I said irregardless, some little kids who was sitting in front of me, who was sitting with her dad, turned around and looked at me and said, that's not a word. And then the dad turned around and said, yeah, that's not a word. And they both had the same eerily smug look on their face. And I'm looking at them going like, oh, man, I can tell whatever the dad is what the kid is. Like, if the dad's a grammar Nazi, the kid's going to be a grammar Nazi. If the dad's some weird, like, anti-social...
might
be the same way, too.
The kids are not born that way.
No, they're not. They just basically emulate whatever their parents do. So if the parent is a bad dad, the kids are going to be a bad dad. And exactly what you're saying, it just keeps going forward. So really important to have good characteristics. So you had mentioned some bad things, some good things. What do we mean specifically? What is a good way to show well-being for a kid? What's a bad way to show that you've prioritized their well-being as a kid? Do you have examples?
Well, reinforce the good behavior, of course. This is classical programming or classical psychology. If they do something good, you reinforce it. And if they do something bad, you give them negative stimulus. Now, that can be anything from a frown to some people still paddle their kids. You know, it could be anything. I have never done that.
Okay.
And I'm a kind of a proxy parent twice. The only time I've ever been a parent was by marrying and got a stepdaughter. She's the sweetest thing ever. And she's like, well, she's married now, so they're living with us. They're very sweet people, and everything is just great. But I also had a little brother, you know, these big brothers, big sisters things.
Oh, okay.
And I had a little brother. I got him, his name is Jimmy, and when he was like 12 years old, and I was his big brother until he turned 18.
Oh, that's great.
So
wow, that's a long
all
term.
Of that was good. You know, yeah. Just try to give them a positive experience and reinforce good actions and give them love no matter what they do. It has to be unconditional love. Even if you're punishing them for whatever reason, it should be done with love, and they should still be able to see the love in your punishment for what it's doing.
I'm wondering right now, like, it seems like when you say give them a positive reinforcement when they do something positive, if you were to look at like the Christian version of God, for example, mm-hmm. he said, or God would say, like, hey, your rewards are in heaven, just do whatever you got to do now, but your rewards are in heaven. Would that seems like it's more of a delayed rewarding. Is there any benefit that you've seen for like the immediate reward, like, hey, if you do something good, I'll reward you, if you do something bad, I'm gonna show negative stimulus for that, like what it could be a frown, could be anything else. But
yeah, you're talking about the God of the Bible.
God of the Bible. Because, do you think there's
the
value?
God doesn't really make himself known these days in person.
Oh, that's true.
He's not like you do something good. It's not like you're going to look up and see God smiling at you. He is the king of hide and seek.
All right.
But
that's
the Bible.
Good point. Let's go biblical God, and then we'll go to modern.
Well, there are two gods in the Bible, so you have to be careful about which one you talk about.
New Testament.
The one of
Old Testament first. Yeah.
The one of the Old Testament doesn't really give a lot of positive feedback. I can't think offhand of any particular thing that he does in the Old Testament that is rewarding for good actions. You can only think of the ones that are bad, or punishments for bad actions. And they don't even have to be your actions. When David took a census, when God told him not to, he didn't punish David. He punished his people and like gave plagues to 40,000 of them. Mm. When Adam and Eve ate the apple, he punished them, but he also punished all of their offspring to the end of time.
For eternity, yeah.
For eternity. And it's just one thing after another. The people of the world during Noah's time were quote evil, but that means every 7-year-old on down was killed. I mean, even religious people would tell you got to be 7 years old before you're able to make some kind of moral judgment about the world and your actions. But he killed them anyway, killed babies and killed babies in the womb, for that matter.
I got two,
just because the grown-ups were mean or evil.
I have two. We were going to have a Christian on the phone, but I think I'll just throw in some options of perhaps something he might chime up. But maybe two possible examples of being rewarded in the Bible. You have David, who eventually became King David, multiple times was rewarded by God, killed Goliath, won over a lot of different territories, became king. You know, and was one of the chosen people that ultimately led to, you know, the birth of, like, the birth line to Jesus of Nazareth to an extent. And then, that's also debatable, but yeah, like, just God's chosen person became the seed for his chosen people.
He never really shows them affection, though. I mean, these are physical rewards that, you know, according to the Bible, he rewarded him with wives and kingdoms and
but
income,
not like immediate feedback, like, hey, here's something you should keep doing, that's good.
Right.
Here's something you should stop doing, that's bad. I'm just keeping you in track.
Right. Mm. Even, what was it? Never mind, I lost that train of thought.
I think the benefit is with a father in the style that you're exemplifying as an atheist father, you're saying like the immediate feedback is important because that gives closer corrections as kids are developing themselves. Like as they're going through the trial and error process of, can I do this? Is this acceptable? Is this empathetic? Is this good? Is this kind? Is this cruel?
Mm-hmm.
What are my limits? I need an example. I need someone to help me know where right. the limits are, and I need to right. know it immediately as I do it so I don't develop bad habits. And that's yeah. why I think the value of your immediate feedback, positive or negative or otherwise, is...
Oh, it's crucial.
Yeah, absolutely. For especially yeah. for a kid who has no idea how to work in society, like uh-huh. that instant feedback is critical in order for them to be a regular human being, or at least a right. person cool that's cool to be around. But saying, hey, yeah. say, for example, you bought your kid before they were born, you know, a Toys R Us store worth of goodies, and like all the music on Spotify and like all the coolest video games possible from like here in the past up to today. When they're born, it's like that's just what they have by default, but they don't know how to be a good person. They need that correction to help them out. And the best right. thing they have to rely on is their interactions with other people and hopefully authority figures who care enough about them that they can critically feedback or put them in a feedback loop where it's like, hey, that was cool, that wasn't cool. Let me help you out here. Let me not help you out here because I think you got it. Now you're going to develop confidence basically interacting with people. Now I'm letting you deal with people. You got it. Good job. Oh, don't do that again. Yeah. That'll right. send you to jail. But other than that, you're good. Don't bring her home again. She's not good
yeah.
for you.
Well, yeah. Yeah. But we can all think of examples, too, where the guy didn't do anything wrong. Mm. Think about Job.
Oh, yeah. I was going to bring up Job.
He punished Job. He killed his wife and his family, killed all his crops and his animals.
Well, he did win that bet. He did win the bet. Remember?
Yeah. That was God who bet against the devil. Mm. You're talking about God winning the bet.
God's got to win bets. God's
yeah, but
not a
think
loser.
About think about poor Job. He and when God rewarded him for being faithful to him,
yeah,
he didn't bring his original family back. They're still dead.
Right.
His wives and his children are all dead.
Well, I mean, they're property.
He gave them a new family, right. and new animals.
I mean,
like, it's almost like the families are lumped in with the animals and other properties.
Only the women, mostly just the women, right? Like,
yeah.
It's almost as if it was written by a society that didn't value the female perspective or their autonomy uh-huh. and just said, oh, you yep. lost a wife? Let me give you three more. You're good to go.
Boom. Right, right. You're done. It's you know, it's also where if somebody rapes your daughter and he pays you 50 shekels, why wouldn't he pay the daughter 50 shekels? Why wouldn't he make reparations to the daughter?
Right.
Because the daughter is the property of the father.
Hmm.
I mean, it's like he damaged his goods.
And to an extent, so, these are rules that God came up with as part of his whole book of like, hey, this is how I want yeah. you to see women in your society. Whereas I think, yeah. like, I would say any modern atheist person now would be like, no. And if we did say that in the past, we were wrong because, you know, women have autonomy, they have rights, they may not be as strong as men, but they have just as many rights to be a human and have well-being as us. Let's
yeah.
adjust these rules to reflect that because that needs to be fixed. That's a problem and it needs
right.
to be fixed. And I don't think there's
right.
that much of a correction on a godly fatherhood figure because there's no admittance that they're wrong because they're perfect.
Right.
They say they're perfect.
So and they have eternity to make it up to you.
yeah, but fathers make mistakes, and I think that's good because it could be helpful for kids to say, hey, my dad's a person, he did the best he could, he makes mistakes, but he learned from them, he improved on them, and he always tried to do his best, rather than saying, my God's perfect, and whatever he said is the way how it's got to be. Like,
yeah, but that's what they do say.
Yeah. What about
they say that God is perfect.
All right. What about New Testament God in the Bible? Now, listen, anytime you commit a sin, you're rewarded with the gift of forgiveness. What other gift is better than that? Hey,
well,
you
if you're going to get a clean slate every time you do something wrong.
Yeah.
Then there is no wrong.
Right. Just ask for forgiveness. That's a pretty sweet gift.
Mm-hmm.
Like a father and, sacrificing you know, himself for you.
Right.
Like,
well, plus there's two fathers in the New Testament.
Right.
There's Jesus, who's supposedly God the Father.
Right.
But then who does he pray to? Who does he call out to?
Himself.
Particularly in the Garden of Gethsemane. Who's
right.
he talking to? Himself?
The other two components
of
the
Or is he talking
Trinity?
To the other God, the God who's up in heaven?
Right.
You know, like begging him to take this cup from my lips,
right.
as it were,
because
he didn't want to be, he didn't want to die, didn't want to suffer. But, I mean, he's a penitent child, and he's also the father It just makes no sense.
But I want to throw something out at you.
The Trinity makes no sense. I'll put it that way.
You said God doesn't offer any immediate, feedback, rewards, or any love. You have the gift of forgiveness at any time of your disposal as a Christian. Where's the problem there? Doesn't that checkmate atheists?
Well, what gets me is, when I say I'm an atheist and I talk to Christians for a minute, one of the first things they'll say is, "Oh, you just want to sin. Mm-hmm. You don't want to have to live by the rules of the Bible, and you just want to sin." My first reply is, as opposed to staying in the religion and just asking for forgiveness for my sins. Mm-hmm. I mean, how many people go to church on Sunday and then the very next week, they go out drinking and carousing and doing all of these sins, and then they go to church on Sunday, get their slate cleaned, and then keep right on doing it. I mean, what's better than that? So, they have nothing to gain, or I have nothing to gain as far as sinning, to leave the religion behind, because they get a free pass anyway.
Okay. I hear what you're saying. I see that argument. It's like, why even bother joining the church if they're just going to wipe the slate clean anyway? I don't care.
Why staying? Why bother staying in the church if there is no punishment for sin?
Because if you aren't in the church, you'd get punished for sin. But if you're in the church, you can get your sin forgiven.
Well, and if you're not in the church, there's no sin. I mean, there's harm. Which is a different thing.
Sin is
a trespass against God. If there's no God, there's no sin. So, yes, you were not born in sin.
Okay.
No God, no sin. So you were born human. But you can grow up and be a psychopath or somebody who harms their neighbor. And that is definitely real. And we have laws for that. We as a society have passed laws to take care of situations where one person is harming another.
Okay. I see that angle.
Financially, mentally, psychologically, and physically. We have harm covered in our law books.
So I've always liked to wonder about, the most optimal way to, reverse someone who's coming at me with, a checkmate atheist kind of, perspective.
Uh-huh.
But if I were to say, hey, there's definitely... The thing is, there's definitely apologists who would say you believe in God no matter what. Even if you were born in a remote island somewhere, you know God's truth.
Yeah.
And that's hard to – that's its own track to deal with. What I like to say when someone says, hey, God gave you the gift of forgiveness, you can take it whenever you want. And I would say, why do I need to be forgiven for anything? What do I need to be forgiven of? Sin? Who made sin? If he's making the disease, I don't care if he's giving out free antidotes – he should stop giving out the disease. If sin is something he doesn't like, he just tell him to get used to it. He shouldn't say, "Hey, your sin and you got sinned, you have sin, and now you're going to be punished for it." He should just say, "Oh, well, I'm just not going to count this as a sin anymore." You can eat shellfish; it's good.
Sin doesn't exist.
Yeah, because God exists, the concept of sin exists, and as a result, I don't think forgiveness is a means of rectifying that situation. It should just be an acknowledgement of, maybe this idea of sin isn't very good. Maybe I should have maybe a dialogue with the people that I care about and say, hey, keeping up to date, this is what I really meant. Well-being is really important. Let's work on ways to get there together. And if I make mistakes, or if you guys make mistakes, I'll give you feedback immediately. But I'm not just going to come up with a list of rules that I expect you to follow that never changes, because you guys might evolve as a society. Your technology might get better. Your demands to keep you guys healthy might be changing. And I want to have an evolving list of rules that reflect that, with the underlying principle of, I care about you, you care about me, let's work together. But we don't have that.
Yeah.
And I feel like as a father, as an atheist father, they would probably come up with something a little bit more closer to that, compared to, here's a list of 360-ish rules in a book written by people in the, I don't know, Bronze Age, maybe even older than that, and Mesopotamia, and we have to follow this, including all their really, really bigoted outlooks on people that are different from them, or are female, or don't speak their same language, or you pick them from a list. It's just really, really unfortunate what we have right now.
And a list of rules does not morality make. I mean,
yeah, very true.
It makes you, it means you're obedient, not moral, not moral.
Right.
Morality is being able to come to a situation and know from taking in the information about the situation what would be the best for all parties going forward.
Perfectly, you know,
said. Cause the least harm.
Yeah,
to
agreed.
The parties.
Yes.
And Arthur C. Clarke himself said the greatest tragedy in mankind's entire history may be the hijacking of morality by religion.
Sure.
There was a guy who sat down at one of my Ask an Atheist booths and asked me what I thought about, you know, well, religion supplied morality. I said, you think there was no morality before religion came along?
Right. Yeah, you don't
morality
think
goes back
something?
As long as two people have tried to live together.
Right, exactly.
You know, they have to come to an agreement of what helps them go forward and which doesn't help them go forward.
Yeah.
And they have to agree on it. Our morality is a contract that we sign with society as a whole.
Right.
To be a good person, to help each other, or not help each other, but just do no harm to your neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
That's morality, and you have to identify each situation
and the reward,
as it comes up.
And the reward for that is because it's in your own best interests to follow that contract.
To make a better society.
Yeah, because you want to live in a society that's good, not one that's in trouble
right.
or one that might break down, because you benefit from society.
Right.
So if everyone follows it and everyone's getting a net gain, it's its own mm-hmm. self-propelling contract because everyone's benefiting from it by signing onto it. I was just going to say, even like the first 10 commandments are borrowed from Egypt. Like there are commandments listed 1 through 10 that predate even the first 10 commandments in the Bible. So like for someone to say like, you know, morality came from the Bible. Yeah, like there's been societies that had it way before then. Like even look at like ancient Greece. Like that is the cornerstone of basically what is now today Western society, to be honest with you. Like the idea of people coming together and forming like leagues where they say, listen, we need a set of rules to abide how we work with each other as these far off fractions of people. How can all of our tribes come together as one government so that we can take down or at least defend ourselves against greater threats that might arrive in the future?
Yeah.
How do we manage our laws? How do we get our agriculture straight together? How do we treat each other as people? Like, that's really important. And should we have, like, slaves? Are slaves, like, really that useful? Like, we should have these kinds of conversations.
Right.
Love it.
And I like to talk to people who believe that all their morals come from the Bible. You know, my morals come from the Bible. Well, it doesn't take 5 minutes to show them that they don't.
Right.
Because if their morals came from the Bible, then they would do what's in the Bible. Like they would stone gays to death. They would have slaves, or at least try to. They would support slavery.
Right.
They would kill unruly children. They would kill women who are not virgins on their wedding night.
They would kill daughters that bring them dishonor.
Right. All of these things point to the fact that they have morals that are different and better than the morals in the Bible.
And better is that key point.
Sometimes they're honest enough to acknowledge that, and some, most of the time they say, no, that's not right. I belong to the New Testament. All those old rules don't matter anymore, even though Jesus himself said that not one jot or tittle of the old laws will pass until all is resolved.
So what is kind of unfortunate is you have people who have that wiggle, you know, that wiggle room in their religion where there's like, oh, well, my religion my personal rules are different, but that's because I'm living with the Holy Spirit that speaks through me through the Bible. And between the Holy Spirit and the Bible, I get a better idea of where the real morals actually were. But if that's the case, then you have a book that is incomplete, that requires your own inferences and your own understanding of what this Holy Spirit's talking to you to come to a decision. Meanwhile, other people are looking at that same book using that exact same method of listening to their own Holy Spirit or the Holy Spirit in period and arriving at completely different conclusions. And if you think something's moral and there's another group of Christians across the street that thinks something's not moral and you guys are sitting literally on the opposite sides of the same block from each other, what does that tell you about that system that you're using to come to these conclusions? What does it say about that standard? And is that standard actually reliable?
It says it's a Rorschach test.
So
anybody can pick out what they want.
Okay, so we're heading near the bottom of the hour. We're going to be playing some music from Stephen Phelps. Awesome musician, alto, friendly atheist, also, representing the unnamed assembly band at Sunday Assembly. And then we'll come back after the break. Stick around, guys. This is 103.9 FM Wozo Radio, Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. Let's go.
He works like Johnny on the factory floor. But when payday comes around, Johnny's chick is more. When man equals woman and straight equals gay, black equals white and non-believer equals saint, we will sing together, all humankind. Nothing between us but an equal sign. Nothing between us but an equal sign.
Billy told her daddy.
Billy told her daddy.
I'm in love with Patrice.
I'm in love with Patrice.
He said you're not my daughter and put her on the streets. When
man equals woman and straight equals gay, black equals white and non-believer equals saint, we will sing together, all humankind. Nothing between us but an equal sign. Nothing between us but an equal sign.
Now Eddie is a good man.
Eddie is a good man.
Oh, but time and time again.
But time and time again, the police pull him over for the color of his skin.
When man equals woman and straight equals gay,
black equals white and non-believer equals saint, we will sing together, all humankind. Nothing between us but an equal sign.
God.
Nothing between us but an equal sign.
Pick it up.
Boss man told Elijah.
Oh, the boss man told Elijah.
You're perfect for the job.
I think you're perfect for the job.
But you'll never work for me.
Cause you don't believe in God.
When man equals woman and straight equals gay, black equals white and non-believer equals saint,
we're gonna
sing together, all humankind. Nothing between us but an equal sign.
We got nothing.
Nothing between us but an equal sign.
We won't.
Nothing between us but an equal sign.
We got nothing.
Nothing between us but an equal sign.
Love them. listening to the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on WOZO 103.9 LPFM in Knoxville, Tennessee. Feel free to join in on the conversation at 865-333-5937. That's 865-333-5937. And now, back to the show. Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
Simply the best.
Welcome back. I'm Doubter 5, and this is the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM, live right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Today is Sunday, June 16th, and if it's not, then you're listening to a rebroadcast or a podcast of the show. Okay, now let's talk about the free thought groups that you can join right here in Knoxville. First, there's the Atheist Society of Knoxville, founded in 2002. We're in our 17th year now.
Wow.
ASK, yep. ASK has over 950 members, and you can find us online at knoxvilleatheist.org.
We got to do something when we hit 1,000. When we hit 1,000, we got to do something.
Yeah, we should. We really should. You can also go to Meetup, or you just Google Knoxville Atheists and find us. It's just that simple. Also, you can join ASK in person, at their weekly Meetup, which happens every Tuesday evening at Barley's Tap Room and Pizzeria in Knoxville City. In Knoxville's old city, where we get together for food, drink, and conversation. Everybody is welcome. That is, as long as you don't come to preach, proselytize, provoke, or punch. Thank you, Atheist Experience. By the way, if you don't live in Knoxville, you should still go to Meetup and search for an atheist group in your town.
Very
don't
true.
Don't find one, start one. Another large free-thinking group here in Knoxville are the Rationalists of East Tennessee. They've been around for more than 20 years. RET has biweekly presentations and discussions at the Pellissippi State Campus near Hardin Valley Road. They meet the first and third Sundays at the Goins Administration Building, Cafeteria Annex. And if that's too much to remember, just go to rationalist.org and click on upcoming events. There's also a Sunday Assembly, which started in England a few years ago and now is spread across the world. It's a no-God church, imagine that. For those who no longer believe in gods, but still like the fellowship of a church-type gathering. Sunday Assembly only meets once a month on the fourth Sunday of each month down at the World's Fair site in Knoxville in the International Building. And earlier in the show, we'd talk about the Atheist Call-In TV show. Well, it's called Free Thought Forum, and you can see it almost every Wednesday night between 6:30 and 7:30 on Comcast Channel 12 or Charter Channel 192. Or you can watch it streaming online at ctvknox.org. You can also find archives of some of their shows on YouTube, where a fan has been posting them. Go to YouTube and search for three words, Free Thought Forum Knoxville. Also, if you're interested in getting involved with the TV or this radio show, just come to an Ask Meetup or RET meeting and talk to us about it. You could be our next co-host or guest. And that's it. We're back to the show.
Nice. So we were talking about fatherhood and honors of Father's Day. And we were comparing what a good father is, which sounded like it's someone that prioritizes well-being of their kids in order to empower society and improve society. And whereas bad fathers tend to not do that, hold themselves over a higher priority, or instill really bad habits in their kids that lead to a detriment of society. Some of the specifics that we were talking about was positive feedback, negative feedback, immediate feedback, basically, to help correct someone who's developing their talents to interact with society. And we noted that, like, a biblical God, as described in the Old and New Testaments, doesn't really give rewards as far as, like, a feedback loop. It's just, here's the whole universe for you to have fun in, and when you die, I'll give you more rewards, but for the most part, you're on your own.
Or punishments.
But I will be around for punishments. I'll definitely punish you, but as far as, like, rewarding feedback, good jobs and all that stuff, no, I don't do that. I don't do that, which might reflect...
And let's talk about that punishment for just a minute.
Oh, go for it.
You could ask anybody, and the most honest answer you'll get is from kids. Of course, the parents already have their story made up. But if you talk to somebody about murdering somebody by burning them at the stake, you know, even for 15 minutes it takes them to die, and ask them if that we should use that as court or capital punishment in America, they'll say no. And they'll say, and you say, why? And they'll say, well, it's cruel and unusual punishment. But they don't think twice about somebody who would burn you for eternity and never stop burning you. Even in Islam, they say that God will burn the flesh off of you, give you new flesh, and then burn that off of you and do it repeatedly for the end of time. It's a psychopath who would do something like that. He would do it, a psychopath would do it once, but I don't think there's even a word for someone who would do it eternally, unless that word is God.
I feel bad because we were going to have a Christian on the show, but I figure if he was on the show, he would chime in and say, actually, there's no description for like a burning hell in the Bible, or maybe they just have a version of the Bible that doesn't have that. And they say, well, the real truth of hell is being away from God and that's what hell is. But if that was even an eternity, imagine in the sense that like you're a kid, right? And your brother gets to be with God, but you're shunned away from God, not for a month, not for a year, but literally for all of eternity. That is still a really cruel and unusual punishment. Like that in my mind is like, that's such a cruel thing to do. I can't imagine, even if that sounds mundane for a short period of time, for an eternity, that is pretty terrible. Also knowing like there are other people with God.
I talk to a lot of Christians. I think you do too. Has any of them ever,
I do. I mean,
whenever they find out that you're an atheist, do they say, oh, you're going to be away from God for eternity?
No, they
do
never
say
that.
They never say that.
No,
they
but...
say that in private when really they're pushed against the wall in an argument. They'll say, well, it's not really burning.
But in conversation with
Christians anywhere in the world, when you find out you're an atheist, the first thing they're going to say, well, you're going to burn.
Right. The pastor at the pulpit says, you're going to burn so we can get 10% of your paycheck. But Christians on the field are like, oh, atheists, I've never met them. They're going to burn. But when they're talking to an atheist, it's like, oh, well, you know, maybe it's not actually a fiery
or not accurate.
Misinterpreted.
Doesn't really mean that.
Your brain turns on when you're talking to someone who's like rational and nice to you. That's interesting.
Right.
But I wanna bring up another thing. We had mentioned Old Testament, New Testament, but we never really went to the God that we seem to be, if at all, experiencing right now. Hopefully that makes some sense. Like when a Christian says, oh, I believe in God, like they're not talking about Old Testament, they're not talking necessarily about the New Testament, because those seem to be very strict, very explicit figures. The God they're referring to is like, you know, the feeling in my chest, this connectedness that I have with everybody. You know,
I didn't hear that last. The God they're talking about, what?
The connectedness that I have with everyone, the feeling in my heart when I know I'm doing good things, the voice in my head that tells me to stay on track.
The good warm fuzzy feeling they have.
Warm fuzzy feelings, that feeling I get when I listen to Christian music, the G's and the C's and the A's and the D minors. Power chords playing over and over again.
The idolized Jesus in their mind.
The things I attribute to my God belief tends to be the God that most people nowadays deal with. Is there a reward back? Is that attribution that they have, that God, is that a good father figure? And in what way is it?
Well, the way they imagine him, he gives unconditional love. I think that they're not imagining the character in the Bible. Matter of fact, churches tell you that they will give you unconditional love. Come join the flock. You know, we love each other. We're one big happy family.
We'll give you a foundation.
We represent the love of the kingdom of God. But as soon as you start breaking any of their rules or not believing the same things that they do or questioning what they have taught to their people, then you find that there are conditions, and they're pretty good conditions. Pretty strict conditions, I guess I'll say. Even the way you dress,
right,
or who you see,
right?
You know, the
or how you address each other, or who you can be with if you're brand new, or who you can be with if you're really old in the church.
You'll find out that their conditions are pretty steep.
Yeah. I mean, it always looks nice on the outside. Like for example, I have a lot of friends that are Mormons. Mormons are really, really great in representing their faith on the outside, because there's explicit mm-hmm. guidelines for how to do it and appear good. But like in the church, there's a lot of like, I don't know, you know, the same turmoils, interpersonal turmoils that you get anywhere else. I know for my mom, for example, who's a Jehovah's Witness, outside, you know, Jehovah's Witness looks like they're dedicated to their duty, having like good, you know, dressing guidelines. No one ever like dresses promiscuously, and they seem to enjoy old school values. I don't know what that means, but on the inside, I can't tell you how many times my mom has complained about the stuff mm-hmm. that goes on inside her kingdom hall. Just like, oh, these people are screwing me over. I hate these guys. I gotta go to a different one. It's just like, okay. It's the same human level of gossip each time, which strikes me as the human condition. It's like, hey, you look good on the outside, but once you start pulling back layers, there's some problems. And I find with the idea of a fuzzy, warmy, feely God that you just attribute good feelings to, that is, of course, a good feeling. It feels nice. But as far as like a guide for like how to behave, there are things that I can do that feel good to me that could actually be detrimental to other people. For example, like if I give money to a person on the street, like a panhandler, that might actually encourage more panhandlers to come into the city, might actually increase civic costs, might actually overwhelm like actual bodies or government buildings that actually do a good job of taking care of the poor, but now they're on the street because now they have an easy access to money rather than like being sober so they can live inside their housing or stuff like that. So if it gave me the warm fuzzies to give shoes to Ethiopian kids like en masse, like, you know, I'm just going to send 100 shoes to this Ethiopia, that makes me feel good. Mm-hmm. It gives me the warm feelings. It makes me feel connected to my God. I might be putting Ethiopian shoe sellers out of business by doing that and destabilizing their economy by making them dependent on me by overflooding items in their economy. Like, just because it feels good and it makes you feel connected doesn't necessarily mean that you're giving a positive impact to society. And I think the value of the father is someone who's been around enough in society long enough to hopefully understand the consequences of good intentions and is able to actually talk to their kids and say, hey, I know this feels good, but the situation is a lot more complex than you would like. Here's a better way to do that. If you want to help this person out, here's who you can give money to. If you want to give shoes to these people, here's some different programs you can use to support to help these people in a more productive way. As a good father, I think an atheist would be able to say, like, actually, I don't have a dogma, but I'm going to look for the best ways to make the best impacts on society.
Right. Simple answers and simple gestures in a complex world a lot of times miss the mark or at least cause ripples that that don't do well in society. But with your heart in the right place, you can see where people would want to do that.
Right. No doubt. And I'm not saying it's bad to have those feelings. I'm just saying to use that as your guiding compass solely, without like some sort of awareness of how your actions have consequences on others, can be a dangerous thing.
Yeah.
And if we all want to feel good, there's a good way to do that. And it might just involve a little bit more critical thought. But if you are a Christian listening to this and you're like, hey, I do have these feelings whenever I do something good, and I don't care about their impact, it just makes you feel good. Hey, that's not a good thing, because now you're basically just saying, hey, I care more about myself than how my actions are actually impacting others. But if you think oppositely, then it's like, of course, I should think about how I'm impacting other people. Let's make a dialogue and work on a better way to do that, because I care more about other people than how I feel.
Yeah, and you have to take into consideration the fact that some charities are better than others.
Right.
And giving to secular charities who have been well researched, more of your money would go to getting the impact that you want rather than just give it to your local church, who's either going to spend it on just spreading the word, prettying up their church or buying a better car for the pastor or whatever.
Paying off car payments for the pastor. He always comes
to... Is your money really going to make a world a better place, or is it going to make the pastor's world a better place?
It's true. I have noticed, so like when we moved to Georgia for the first time, it was around high school, we would go to a number of churches trying to look for a new church. This was back when we were religious. And the pastor would always have like a really, really nice Lincoln, really, really nice suit. Really nice, you know, fade. That's a black people term for like a haircut. And the idea was he has to look successful and good. I asked other people. This is the part where I started asking questions. So I'm asking people in the church, like, why? Like, this is the third church we've been to, and every single one has like a brand new car and stuff. It's like, yeah, but the pastor needs to look good. He needs to look successful because that represents the church. And if he looked like a bum, no one would want to give the church money. So it's his duty to look as good as possible. And I'm like, well, then
Duty to look nice. He doesn't have to wear $300 suits.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
$1,000 suits.
Right.
Rolex watches.
Yeah. So I'm like, well, then if I'm giving like, if we're giving like these $5 and whatever in the pan, and why is it that, where's this money going? Like, is it going to help people? Like, where does this money actually go? Like, you guys don't pay taxes. I don't know if this building's already paid off for, so there'd be no property tax in that event. So, is it just electricity, or is it like a new car payment for the pastor and his family and stuff like that? His kids. I went to another church before. A pastor had, and this pastor passed away, but he was a good guy. But he had a bunch of kids that wanted to be hired by the church, and of course they got hired by the church because, you know, there was like nepotism involved, right? And so none of them really had any talent, but they were getting a full paycheck.
What?
None of them really had any talent, but they were getting a full paycheck.
Oh, yeah.
Through whatever they were doing one day a week, you know, like,
yeah.
Oh, it was rough. It was very, very rough to like see how corrupt, you know, these organizations get. And the leader who's involved, it should be like the example figure. But if, again, like as we said in the first half, if you have a bad father figure, it's going to reflect in the congregation or whatever child that person's raising. And similarly, if you have a bad, corrupt pastor who focuses on turning wealth towards himself and looking good, you're going to have a bunch of people around him who have the same goals and endeavors. And as far as actually helping other people, you won't see that.
Yeah.
Oh, I feel like I've been talking a lot. Hey, let me ask.
Well, let me say one thing. I said a little bit earlier about unconditional love from churches. There are some assemblies out there that I think, in my own opinion, are much better about welcoming people no matter what their religious views are. The Universalists, Unitarian,
absolutely
do that. So I certainly wouldn't want to spread what I said over that area.
No, they're really
good.
Because
they're very accepting of, you know, they accept anybody from atheists to Christians to Jews to
Hindus.
Islam. They don't care.
Yep.
Because they believe everybody's going to heaven. Period. And if you don't even believe that, they still want you because you're human, and they're building a human society. Humanism is what they practice in general.
Right.
There's some very liberal Methodist churches in East Tennessee that are very accepting. There's some Presbyterian churches. I know one particular pastor who is very accepting and very loving. They have good communities. But I was talking about the fundamentalist churches, the
West Barrow,
Jehovah's Witnesses,
Drewsboro,
West, and the fundamentalist Baptist churches, and things like that.
Yeah.
But so I didn't want to spread it too thin, spread it over too many people. So address that a little bit.
I got a weird question for you then. Do you? We talked about bad examples of fatherhoods in the Bible. I want to say to the person who's saying, I'm not going to listen to what your bad things you're saying about the Bible, then could we at least highlight one example of a good father figure in the Bible, and what would be that person, if any?
Silence, crickets. I'm thinking.
I'll give you some time. We're looking for a good father figure in the Bible, because I don't think there's a lot of good positive female figures in the Bible, but there has to be at least one good father figure in the Bible. Like good ones, just like he did the things he needed to do. Good job. So like, should we run the list?
I can't think of any. I really can't. I mean, my mind goes to Abraham. No.
No, but yeah, no. That Mallon thing was a little gross.
You know, goes to
Noah,
David.
Maybe.
No. You remember what happened after the flood?
I don't remember what happened. Well, Moses?
Well, he got drunk and impregnated both his daughters.
It's bad. It's bad. It's bad. Moses, then,
Yeah.
like he says, here's my people. I'm going to let them free. I'm working hard. I'm freeing all my people through the desert. I'm going to come down with rules for them, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Well,
and
you
then
remember
he dies
what
in
he
the
did
desert.
After he...
He died in.
You remember what he did when he came down and he brought the gold and or the plates with
He
him and
got
they were
so
worshiping.
angry, he broke him, and
Yeah.
he went back up again and got him again. I'm
And
like, that's a classic.
he killed half the followers.
No way! Did he do that?
Yeah,
I did. I
yeah.
forgot about
He
that.
told his brother. He says, "Brothers kill your other brothers." Basically, turned family against family. Anybody who was worshiping the calf had broken the covenant with God and was to be slain.
Whoa!
So
okay.
It was a mass slaughter.
Okay. Jeez. All right. Oh.
And by the way, while we're on the Ten Commandments, I'll just take just a minute to mention the fact that, there
got
are
5 minutes
two
left
Ten
in the show.
Commandments.
Go for
Actually,
it.
I've heard there are three, but there are two sets of Ten Commandments. He
Right.
came down with one, he broke them, and went back up and got another set. They're not the same ten.
Okay.
You would think that God would remember from 1 minute to the next, you know, what he put on the first plates, but he didn't. He put different stuff on the second.
I know, that's so crazy. I have one. I have a one. Joseph, he saw Mary. She was pregnant. If you believe the story, it wasn't his kid, but he still took care of Mary. In Mesopotamia times, that's crazy for a guy to do that.
Yeah.
He had a job.
Yeah.
He was a carpenter. He risked it all to help this one lady who needed help, and then eventually made good with her, and I think married her, or at least had more kids with her later on, and
yeah.
actually tried
yeah.
to tell Jesus, hey, quit being such an annoying
a jerk
brat.
To your mom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Jesus was like, I can do whatever I want, but at least he tried. And I'm like,
yeah.
he didn't kill anybody afterwards, and I feel like he's probably, and there's no crazy...
Well, you could...
twist
yeah.
at the end
you
of
could
the
also
story.
Say you could also I've thought of another one.
Right.
Job.
Oh
took
yeah.
care of his family.
Yeah,
he was a
yeah.
good man of God and took care of his family and God didn't do right by him.
Right.
Punished him.
Right.
On a bet.
On a
but,
bet.
You know, there's no real instance of him doing bad as far as I can remember from the Bible towards his kids.
Okay. Hey, we found two of them, you guys. Don't say
yeah.
we can't do
yeah.
the impossible. Happy Father's
well,
Day, everybody.
We don't know the Bible that well either. We
your closing
people
words.
Going, hey, you forgot about the instance where.
Hey, send your comments and feedback. Larry, quick closing words. We got like 30 seconds left.
Oh, it's predictable. Don't sweat going to heaven or hell. Nobody is actually going to hell because there's no such thing as a soul. But if there were, according to all the religions of the world, everybody's going to somebody else's hell anyway. So don't sweat it. It's no big deal.
All right, we'll see you next week on Digital Free Thought Radio Hour 103.9 FM. Have a great week, everybody. We love you.
In Knoxville. Take care. Bye-bye.
Game over.
You've been listening to Digital Free Thought Radio 103.9
FM, Knoxville. Thank you for having me.